you pray with me. God of the Passion, show us Jesus, and that is enough for us. Amen. Please be seated, those of you who are here in the room. He didn't exactly cover himself in glory. I didn't grow up with that phrase, but maybe you know it now like I do. It's a phrase that we turn to comment on, say, a celebrity who goes off at an award show, or a politician who stumbles into a gaffe, maybe to a goalkeeper who gets lit up in the second half of the game, or to comment on an underperforming employee, and maybe a friend who downs two drinks too many. Didn't exactly cover himself in glory. Basically, anyone we manage to observe in what is not their finest hour. Now, sometimes in freshman sociology classes or newspaper op-eds, you'll hear people describe certain parts of the world, say the Middle East or the Far East, as honor-shame cultures. Usually, apparently, as opposed to Canada or the U.S., and while I think there might be a kernel of sociological truth there, mostly I think this is misleading, and it's not as if saving face doesn't matter just as much to us. It's not as if public shame doesn't generally feel like death, no matter where you're from. It's not as if PR firms and image fixer publicists and controlling the narrative aren't the corporate version of something we all do on social media, if we're on social media, or if we're not, maybe in our selective disclosures and omissions in conversation with friends and acquaintances. We too, we as much as anyone, are hungry to be admired, desired, and loved. And we'd probably never use a word so grandiose as glory to describe what we long for. But that does not mean that each of us doesn't want and even need, fundamentally, to shine a little in the eyes of someone else just for being who we are. One of the things that's most painful about Holy Week, I think, is that we watch Jesus suffer an escalating social death before he breathes his last. At the beginning of the week, now as he's teaching in the temple, the authorities of Jerusalem who have platforms will dog him with gotcha questions. And by the end of the week, the same crowd that hyped him coming into town is going to turn into a mob that's only interested in reducing him to slander or nothing. Liars are going to come out of the shadows to tell incriminating half-truths about him. The police of the day will beat him, and they will leave his face dripping with saliva and phlegm. His best friends will ghost him, and he'll be dressed in a stupid costume and pinned up naked like a picture on a dartboard that his kin can practice hurling insults at. By every normal measure, these are not Jesus's finest hours. And here, just now, read for us in the story remembered to us, we witness one of the most shameful, I think, and painful episodes of Jesus' shameful, painful final days. Do you hear the quaver in his voice? He is shaken in spirit, it says. As he tells his closest friends that one of them is going to choose to save face by pitching him under the bus. Hand him over. Rat him out, play turncoat. And it's a person near enough to Jesus at the supper table to brush hands with him as they dip pieces of bread in the dish with the dip. Judas, whose name means praise, is going to make sure that Jesus is not covered in glory. Judas, we're told, evicts loyalty and compassion from his heart and lets the devil, the accuser, move into the master bedroom. And even if, in retrospect, as we tell the story, Judas is to blame, and I don't think there's any good way to tell the story that says he's not, that doesn't change the fact that there's shame here for Jesus too. How can the betrayal of your dearest friend and apprentice appear, make you appear, like anything other than a failed leader? Like a cuckolded lover who couldn't keep the home fires burning. So no wonder John, the storyteller, says very plainly, in the nyx, in Greek, it was night. The glow of Palm Sunday is gone. For Judas, apparently, but maybe also for anyone watching the scene, Jesus' shine has worn off. And so no wonder, too, that after Jesus has outed the betrayal that's at the table, and after Jesus has left the table mid-meal, no one says anything. Silence hangs thick. Until Jesus speaks. And he says the craziest thing anyone could ever say in a moment like this. Just now, he says, the Son of Man was glorified, and God was glorified in him. Think about that. Take a picture of this moment, says Jesus. If you want to see who I am in all my splendor, who God is in all God's splendor, then this is the moment worth capturing, framing, and showing off to guests when they come over for supper. This moment, says Jesus, is God's finest hour. This is glory. Right here, in being covered with shame, and more shame to come, Jesus says he is shining. Here in the deepening embarrassment of God's own word made flesh, God flashes out in glory. What in the world could be so glorious about this shameful moment? I think it's what a friend of mine once called Jesus' undefended love. He offers his back to the backstabber. He opens himself up to bad press. He stays at the table, determined to give himself to his friends, even if they will treat him like a liability. And that's the unashamed, unflinching love that's incandescent at the heart of the one true God, sending off light towards us and even revealing us. And what does it reveal? Haven't we, after all, here and there, and more than we'd like, treated Jesus like an expendable thing? Haven't we sacrificed him to our values? Have we ever traded time with God for something more worthwhile? Distanced ourselves from association with the divine out of embarrassment. And yet Jesus stays in his seat. He eats with us, even if we shame him, And if we take that to heart today, if we take that to heart, then it may be that we have found ourselves making for the door like Judas, and we come back to the table. It may be that we find ourselves questioning the way that we normally weigh out what is shameful and what is glorious. We might even discover a cure here for our own allergy to shame, which so easily warps our decision-making and shrinks our love. We might find a bit more freedom to love a little more unhingedly and boldly, without so much self-defense. But more than anything, we might discover some of why theologian Catherine Sondrager says that there's nothing sweeter in human life here under the sun than to think the thought of God, to let our eyes catch the shine of God in a moment when the glory flashes out, and to let that shine ricochet its way into our hearts. Because here today and throughout Holy Week, God is revealed for who God is in the encroaching betrayal. And here, as night begins to fall, Jesus is entering his finest hour. We will try to suffocate him in shame, but he will be covered with glory. The only question is, can you see it?